Which, by the way, is something I would avoid at all costs.
What, the stress center?
If you give me a relaxation center, I'm more about that. But I see no reason to go get all worked up under the auspices of medical treatment.
I mean.
Like, hey, Mark, how's it going? Got any bills due soon? Do you feel like you've met your full potential as a person? Fuck you, stress center.
I do not want any of this. Hi, and welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. Today's episode continues our multi-episode arc exploring the curious case of Natalia Grace, an investigation discovery miniseries which premiered in May and is currently streaming on Max and Discovery Plus. As longtime listeners know, Mark and I usually like to find some kind of theme that ties these stories to a larger sociological situation. However, with this one, the characters are so wonderfully weird that for the time being, all we are doing is sharing our utter disbelief and confusion about what did and what didn't happen with this bizarro situation. Two episodes in, and we are nowhere closer to the truth, and we are also here for every minute. Once again, if you are Michael Barnett, you probably shouldn't listen to this because you're just an unbelievable weirdo and we call you out at every chance we get. But the rest of you are welcome to come on in and speculate along with us. Hi, Mark Snedeker.
Hello, Christina LaRusso. I am wondering...
Yes?
...if I suffer from CPP.
What is...
Now, are you down with CPP?
I don't know. What is CPP?
Central... Precocious puberty.
Oh.
I did a little research.
Oh, you did some research, Mark. Okay.
It is possible for children with this particular syndrome to experience puberty before the age of 8.
You're kidding.
To be showing signs of puberty before the age of 8. Now, is that what's going on here? No idea.
Yeah, we don't know, but that
is a thing. CPP.
I wonder if they thought to check that out.
I don't think they thought... hard about anything they're doing. They're just like, can we just get this bunch of crazy shit on camera? Great.
Oh, wait.
Should we do some analysis? No. Should we provide context? No. Should we talk to like a qualified doctor? No.
Yeah, there's no speculation on any of the diagnoses or anything like that.
No.
We do in this episode, though, and from a hot take perspective, I like that about this episode. We do get some... outside information from an attorney from Beth Karras comes in. We hear the other side of things. We hear other witnesses talking about things. We actually hear from Natalia in this episode.
We
see an interview with Natalia.
Yeah.
That took place, a forensic interview during the trial process. So we do start to see more than just what Michael is trying to tell us happened.
Yes. Although... we don't see much more.
No, not a lot more, but we do see some. And it allows then, I think, for us as viewers to start going, huh? Because really in the first episode, all you are hearing is Michael, and mostly you're hearing Michael just in 2019, telling a story that's a very internal story, it's his word against everybody else,
right?
because it's all happening inside the walls of the house.
Correct.
Pretty much.
And anybody else that's not Michael is not really talking to us, except maybe his son, who really doesn't have that great of a grasp of
what really happened.
Chain of events or anything like that.
And yeah, some of his family members who have obviously a bias, they want to say, they want to believe the best in him.
Mom ain't there.
And the thing is that are those people lying? And I want to be clear about this. Like Jacob, the son, and his mother and his sister, I think they're telling what the truth is that they understand the truth to be.
Right.
I don't think that those people are maliciously lying.
Gaslit.
I think they've been lied to.
Yeah.
And they're just saying what they're saying.
Right.
So let's talk about episode 2. So where we left off in episode 1 was Natalia had just attempted to poison Christine.
Allegedly.
Allegedly with Pledge.
or something like that. Yeah.
Which is
or
so
Fabuloso
stupid.
Or something.
And really what they show in the reenactment is like Lysol or some kind of Mr. Clean, a bottle of that sitting there. Which to me, it's like you're doing dishes. Are you really going to have a bottle of Mr. Clean sitting there?
Why is that sitting out?
Why would that be sitting there? But on the other hand, it could be. I mean, I have my Clorox cleanup sitting right there on the counter, but okay. All right. So Michael says they take her to a place called the Stress Center.
Okay.
So I, too, did a little research here.
Oh, well. And you've been known to do that.
What they were talking about is the Ascension St. Vincent Stress Centers. And these are places throughout Indiana.
Right.
And they may be in other states as well. But they are behavioral health clinics. And what they say is, we deliver a wide range of mental health services with compassionate care. Our care team listens to understand your concerns, so together we deliver the care that is right for you. Our team approach focuses on healing mind, body, and spirit. Our care teams are here when you feel overwhelming stress or have medical problems that affect emotional health. Our counselors help you and your family with our educational team approach by addressing harmful behaviors and addictions. They address things like coping problems. They have specialty programs that are available for youth with behavioral health concerns, women experiencing perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, seniors coping with aging and depression, adults struggling with chronic pain, complex health conditions, and depression, drug and alcohol dependency programs. Our care team provides dedicated programs for the treatment of drug and alcohol dependency and abuse. We provide a modern treatment approach to improve the experience of addiction recovery and support and long-term success. They also have a program that is focused on schizophrenia and the attendant, some attendant things, paranoia and things that are around schizophrenia. What they do not say that they have is something that would deal with what Michael claims Natalia has been diagnosed with. Which is
an addiction to murder.
No. So Natalia has in the last episode we learned that Natalia was diagnosed as a psychopath
by that one place, allegedly.
Potentially. This is at Michael. However, we do get confirmation later in the episode from Beth Karras, who says she's been diagnosed as a psychopath.
Yeah.
So, but
psychopath, you don't, is that even really a diagnosis?
It is a diagnosis.
Oh, okay.
Psychopathy is an antisocial personality disorder, is what I understand, correlated with crime and violence. It's been, as a concept, known for centuries, but in recent years, there's been more research done on psychopathy. Interpersonal traits that are associated with psychopathy include glibness, superficial charm, grandiosity, pathological lying, and manipulation of others. Affective traits include a lack of remorse or guilt and shallow affect, lack of empathy and failure to accept responsibility. The lifestyle behaviors include stimulation-seeking behavior, impulsivity, irresponsibility, parasitic orientation, and a lack of realistic life goals.
Yeah, but other than that, I'm fine.
But like, so antisocial behaviors include poor behavioral controls, early childhood behavior problems, juvenile delinquency, revocation of conditional release, and committing a variety of crimes. I'm getting this from an article in Psychology Today called Psychopathy, a Clinical Diagnosis.
It's fascinating.
It is interesting, but the thing is that she's a child. You know, right. I mean, maybe you're seeing the early behavioral state of that, but
yeah.
Children are a little sociopaths. Most children are not empathetic. They don't learn to be. They haven't learned that their frontal lobe isn't.
Of course, she might be 35.
We don't know, right? Okay, so that's the thing.
Unless you're down with CPP.
I don't think that it's a treatable thing. According to what they're saying in this documentary, it just is. And Michael says
that's just
that
how she be.
Michael says that repeatedly. That they are told this as a family.
Well, of course, he wants to make the argument that they should have no further responsibilities. And
because she's a psychopath?
Yeah, because this is an insurmountable problem. There's nothing they can do to treat it. Return to sender.
Which is not what ends up happening. So the places that she is sent to, they actually say,
go home.
Go home.
Hope you don't die.
So what happens is when they go to this stress center,
yeah,
that's what they're told. So what happens there is they say, you know, there's nothing we can do with her. You got to take her home. She's off our hands. Yeah. But she can't have free roam of the house.
No.
You've got to keep her locked in.
She's a hand grenade with the pin pulled at this point.
Which seems bananas to me. So
I'm going to question whether that is an accurate depiction of the diagnoses they received.
Well, okay, but let's talk about this. Knowing nothing, and we are not psychologists, right, and we know nothing about it beyond what we read in,
let's not say,
you know,
nothing,
things like, right, Psychology, I mean, Today.
I'm now a budding expert in CPP.
I know. How many times are we going to hear CPP in this episode?
So many.
So let's say that that's something that happens. And you say, my kid is wild.
You have to find another solution, not because, you know, you shouldn't take some responsibility over this child, but you have other kids in there. If she was legitimately a danger... I'm not so much worried about the adults because I think they have overblown that. But if she's legitimately a danger to the other children, she has to be removed.
So what do you do? So you have people that say, okay, she is this. Let's say that you have a child that is, she is a child.
Right.
But she's also a psychopath. That, first of all, how do you know that the child is not going to outgrow whatever that is? You don't. You can say she's showing a tendency towards that, but she's not a full adult yet.
Right.
There's
allegedly.
Isn't there some nurture that could happen that might correct that? We don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't know.
I think what I would do is, I think Target has the most liberal return policies of all the big box stores.
You take her back.
You don't really even need a receipt. Now, you would only get store credit. You know, you're not going to get cash. But that's what I would try.
Idiot. All right. So then you say what? All right. She goes to where?
Well, I mean, like you have to institutionalize
her. You have to put her in some kind of institution.
Which may not be permanent, right? But for the time being, I think if those were all true things, which we have, that's very much an open question, right? But if those are all true things, I think for the sake of your other children, you would have to have her institutionalized. I mean, she's criminally insane at that point, basically, right? She can't help herself. She doesn't have the moral, you know, compass to tell her that these are wrong things to do. And she's shown intent to do them. Mm-hmm. That's all you need. You would have to have her institutionalized, because trying to keep her under lock and key inside your own house doesn't seem all that practical.
And why wouldn't anybody help? Why wouldn't a medical professional say,
maybe
help?
They were like, I think you guys are full of shit and are maybe not telling us the truth, especially that creepy Michael guy.
Yeah, Michael is a creepy dude. Like, the way he talks is so affected.
Yeah.
And it's, instead of saying the, he says the a lot. It really annoys me when people use the instead of the.
Yes.
I don't know why, but it.
And he insists that he is not a creep. He's a crepe.
Oh, God. It's just every description that he gives is so rehearsed.
Yes.
And it is so dramatic.
Yes.
And he uses, you know, he gestures.
He does.
And his voice.
Yeah, he's very, like you said, he has a very affected style.
Yeah, he is. It's very performative.
And that makes him look very
fake.
Fake and untrustworthy. Absolutely.
I mean, he just makes my skin crawl. So they have to take her back. And then he bemoans the fact, Michael, that the family has not been able to really do anything. They can't go out to, and this I don't understand either.
By the way, they didn't really.
Why can't they go out to dinner?
Yeah, they didn't really establish that. Evidence for that in the documentary. He didn't talk about any other stories other than these two alleged murder attempts. You know, he's not giving us any narrative to go with that every day is fraught with danger.
No, right.
So could you have gone out to dinner? Probably. I mean, you know.
She'd had to have come with you.
Yeah, maybe don't order her a steak.
Keep sure she's got plastic utensils.
Like, yeah, exactly. I'll cut that up for you. It's okay, Natalia. You know, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, you'll be using only a spoon.
That's right. Michael says, We realized we needed to do something fun for our other kids were suffering from this. And I can understand that. I can understand where, like, this is sucking all of the oxygen out of the room. All right. So they decide that they are going to go to Trader's Point Creamery because their youngest son likes cows. And here is a place where you're allowed, as Michael says, you're allowed to milk your own cow.
That's a weird, weird fun day for kids. We're going to work you like 16th century children.
That's right.
How's that?
So you get to milk your own cow, but it also seems
to.
It also seems to be a place where you can go on hikes,
yeah,
through
little
trails
nature
and
walks
like,
and stuff. And
Michael explains they all get there and then they all have to sign waivers because there's an electric fence and you have to sign a waiver saying we recognize that there's an electric fence. If we get ourselves tangled up
dangerous.
In it, that's on that's on us. Yeah. We're taking that risk. And we recognize it because the cows need the electric fence. Okay. Right. So he describes then as soon as she hears about this electric fence, this just, she I does. Wish I could do an in-person. Yeah, well, but he does it in this such a way that it's just, you want to punch him in the fucking throat.
Yeah.
He's like, and her eyes lit up
like Christmas trees. Yes.
Like, it's like, what the hell? And he's just so, oh God, like, the way he talks, I can't.
Like, dude, are you in this documentary or are you narrating figure skating?
It is. It really is. It's just
that
the way,
breathless kind of over the top.
It's awful, awful. Yeah. So he goes on to explain that they're all going to go out on like a nature walk.
Yeah.
And they've got Natalia. So Natalia is a little person.
Yeah,
so
maybe
doing a nature walk?
Maybe that's not the best activity for her. Say, okay, you have multiple disabilities, most of which affect your ability to walk.
Yeah.
We're going on a walk.
We're
going
to go on a walk.
Of course
she
wants to kill you because you guys are psychopaths making her go on a
who's the psychopath here?
A forced march.
It's a death march for this poor child. So anyway, they decide to go on this walk and Michael and the boys are walking ahead and Christine and Natalia are lagging behind. And then Natalia complains about her feet and says, I'm going to sit down. And she sits down. And I can understand a child having this tantrum. Even a child that is in full health might say,
they're like, I'm tired. I'm sitting down.
I'm sitting down. I can't do this walk, right? So Christine says, you go ahead to Michael. According to Michael, again, this is all Michael. Yeah. I'll handle this. I don't want Ethan's birthday to be ruined. So you go ahead. So Michael claims that they go out ahead and he's about 50 yards out. And then they hear screaming.
So much screaming, you guys.
it's like, now he sounds like Ethel Merman when you do that. Mm-hmm. But he's like, and it was just screaming.
Yes, it was terrible.
Terrible screaming.
It chilled me to my very core.
I can't. And so then he looks back, according to him, and he sees Natalia.
This titanic struggle.
Having this big battle with Christine, trying to pull Christine into the electric fence.
So, a couple things about electric fences. As long as it's not like surrounding Stalag 13, the electricity would give you a zap, but it's not like you've been put in the electric chair. Unless you have a very serious heart condition or something, it would be unlikely to kill you.
Well, according to Michael, Christine is frail.
Yes.
And she has some sort of chronic illness. Was it lupus or something like that?
Yeah. But of course, according to the people that work there, it's like that fence wasn't even on.
Right. And we learn that later on. But in this, in Michael's telling of it, he says, and this is what the thing is that as we're watching this documentary unfold, that's the story that you're being told. And so if you're hearing that and you're like Jesus Christ, and then she's
this kid is dangerous.
And then, but you know, it also forces me to say she's a tiny little person.
Yeah.
How could she grab Christine with
multiple handicaps,
fling her into the fence? And this is, he says, well, she uses her upper body and then they show videos of her standing on her head. Well, when I was six,
I could do that too.
I couldn't stand on my head. I couldn't kick anybody's ass. I couldn't take an adult and flung them into an electric fence.
No.
And I was a normal sized person, right? I was an average sized person. I wasn't a little person. So Christine,
they're like, have you seen Lord of the Rings? Gimli is shredded, bro.
But he goes, yeah, he's like, she's got guns that Schwarzenegger would be impressed with. Fuck off, Michael.
No, she would not.
Just fuck all the way off. Yeah. Really, fuck all the way off. This guy just makes me disgusted.
You're going to die, is what she was allegedly screaming.
Yeah, she's screaming. Michael says that she's screaming at, I'm going to kill you, you fucking bitch. You're going to die.
Pretty spicy language.
You're
for
going to die.
Year old or how
well,
old
yeah,
she is,
and Michael is like, what kind of language can I use? You know, he's trying to add this little flavor.
You're being taped. You can use any kind of language.
Fuck
you
off,
want.
Michael, you fucking fucker. So anyway,
obviously we can use whatever language we want.
He claims that then the police came and he goes running back to be involved in this, and he claims in the 2019 interview that he interacted with the police, and the police were taken by her size and said she doesn't need to be arrested, even though she's making these threats. She just needs to have a psych eval. And so they put her in an ambulance and they take her away. So this is when Natalia is hospitalized at LaRue Carter. It's a mental health facility.
Yes.
And now we start to hear some other outside opinions, which correspond with what Michael tells, which is a nurse says that she was definitely an adult. She was, you know, she had breasts and she talked like an adult and she had adult ideas. There was an orderly who said, yep, we had to try and give her sedation and we struggled with her and you could see that she had pubic hair. There's another person.
I mean, how many times have you been wrestling with someone and their pubic hair just
flies out? Yeah, I know. I mean, like, but they were trying to give her a shot in the butt.
I understand.
Then there's somebody described as a witness. None of these people were willing to give their names.
Yeah, that's why I'm like.
So there's a witness.
Alleged nurse. Yeah. Alleged orderly.
An alleged witness from LaRue Carter said that she talked about sex and boyfriends.
Yeah.
And that they put her in the adult wing. And then they said that she was exciting the male patients. She mentioned evidently at some point doing sexual favors for money. Like, these stories are so extraordinary.
Kind of out there, but
okay. So then what are you supposed to do as a viewer of the, you have to believe what you're watching, I guess. But this is when we start to hear from Beth Karras.
Yes.
Now, do you remember Beth Karras when you saw her?
From?
Like Court TV. She was part of the Nancy Grace, like in the...
She has a very Nancy Grace look.
Okay, so right?
She's got the Karen haircut.
But she was a little bit more serious than Nancy Grace. Yeah. Nancy Grace was like the big talking head.
Yeah.
And then Beth Karras would be...
A little bit more measured.
More measured, and she would be the one who was really sitting in the courtrooms.
Less shrill,
and she
possibly.
Definitely less shrill. And she comes across in this, she comes
pretty
across
normal.
As very normal.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, this is when, you know, it was Court TV. She was a part of the Scott Peterson thing.
Yep.
I remember for that. Jodi Arias trial. Also Robert Blake. I think she was involved in that trial.
All the biggies.
So she's got credibility in terms of legal commentary. Insofar as she does, anybody who buddies up with Nancy Grace.
A little bit sus.
Yeah, it's a little sus. But all right, so she acknowledges, like I said before, that Natalia was diagnosed with psychopathy.
Yeah.
And she says, but we have to follow the facts. And she said, Christine and Michael never called the police. I don't know if you got that out of the very first episode, but to me, it seemed... It seemed like, at least to me, there was some sort of involvement by authorities. But actually, if you really think about it, there was not. They never called the police. The only time that the police got involved was at
the farm.
Creamery thing. But also, she talks about Beth Karras, a neighbor called CPS on them.
They left her outside.
Yeah.
To sleep on the porch, basically.
On the deck, because Christine was saying, who are you?
We in danger, girl.
No, she said to her, I demand that you sit down and you write everything down, who you've stayed with, who what families you've been with.
Right.
I need to know who you are. Who are you really? I want to know all of the truth. I need you to write this down.
Yeah.
And Natalia was, I guess, argued back, wouldn't do it or whatever else. And so Christine said, that's it. You don't have a, and Michael said, this is the way she punished her. You don't have a bedroom. You don't have a bed. Go and sleep on the deck and take your blanket. So she put her out onto the deck. Well, she's crying and begging to come back in. And after about 3 hours, Michael let her back in, but it was long enough that a neighbor heard and called CPS, who brought the police into this.
Right.
So what Michael says is that when the police came, he says, within 10 minutes, they looked around at the house and the furnishings, and they saw that it wasn't Natalia that was in danger.
Because I have, because
I'm wealthy.
I have money in
essentially
the bank.
Because I'm wealthy.
Right.
They realized it was boys. The boys were the ones that were in danger.
Let's see that police report.
Okay, Mike. So then he starts referencing this detective Klaus. He evidently is the detective that worked through this neglect situation with Child Protective Services. According to Michael, Klaus said that Natalia had admitted that she'd been told a fake birth date in Ukraine. That she didn't recognize herself in an intake photo for U.S. arrival. They take a picture of her when she arrives. That her height from when she arrived to now had not changed at all. And he told Mike, this is not a child. You should go and get her age corrected. Now, Mike at this point in the interview says, I had never heard of
that
age.
That is the most amazing information.
Who would ever think that you could change?
I looked into it. It's not that easy to get done.
It's not easy to get done?
Yeah. I was like, look how I look, right? Let me be like 10 years younger. And they're like, sir, why are you don't even have an appointment here at court today. Please sit down and leave the courthouse.
I thought you were serious that you looked into it. So this is what Michael says. And he makes this big deal of saying, we'd never heard of it. And I thought, bullshit.
Yeah.
You sat down and researched this.
Right. What could we possibly do?
How can we get an age reassignment or something like that?
How do we get out of this shit?
That's right. Michael then talks about how they tried to figure out where did Natalia come from and what was the situation. They're trying to determine what is her real age.
Right, because they reach out to the adoption agency.
The adoption agency, yeah.
We can't tell you anything, but wink, wink, nudge, nudge, maybe look into that backpack she carries and see if there's any secret information hidden there. We're not saying that there is, but we're saying maybe look. So they found this a mystery little piece of paper with previous the ones who returned her, basically.
Yep.
And so that's where their investigation went next.
That's where they decided to go next. Now, then we have a break we go back to Karis, and Karis tells us how in 2020, people went to Ukraine.
Yes.
Detectives, I guess, went to Ukraine to try and dig into this and sort out how... You know, really, how old is she? Like, what is her situation? And they found her aunt, who is the twin of her birth mother.
Yes. All, by the way, allegedly.
Allegedly.
For me.
And then, they say, okay, yes. And the mother says, look, I've been dealing with this for 17 years.
And they're like, aha, that makes it 2003 the correct number.
Which makes 2003 the correct date. Now, that to me... Okay, I see what Beth Karis is saying there, but that doesn't necessarily mean, that could just mean that gave her up.
Right.
Maybe she, you know, later on in a later episode, we hear more about what the adoption process was about, or how Natalia ended up in the orphanage in the first place. But at this point, Beth Karis is just saying, she says that she's been not dealing with it since it's, for 17 years, and that would make her birth date 2003. So, okay, so now we're sitting here going, well, okay, maybe her birth date is 2003. So now they go back, and they start talking about the Chacones and how they adopted her, but then almost immediately started to unload her at Little People conventions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, if, like, I wanted to get rid of Matthew, right, I would go to, I don't know, kids who liked Pokemon conventions and try to see if I could, like, hey, my kid likes Pokemon. You want him?
Would you like this?
He's got an evolved Pikachu. Just saying.
So they're going around shopping her around. And this is where we again start to meet a few more outside witnesses, I guess, who had involvement.
So one of the people that Chacones, one of the people they approached was another little person named Judith Irving. She's a teacher, and she seems one of the most rational people in this entire documentary. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't seem sketchy at all. Mm-mm. She doesn't seem like she has weird ulterior motives. So then she enters into these discussions with the Chacones, and of course it immediately then becomes very scammy.
Right.
They're like, okay, we're going to need some money.
Just pay the $25,000 in legal fees.
Right. Then you can have her. And she's like, what? Doesn't seem right.
Yeah. And her husband is like.
I mean, there's definitely going to be expenses with adopting a child, but we weren't really looking to go back and pay for yours from, you know, 5 months ago or whatever it was.
Right.
No.
Yeah. Her husband puts his foot down and says no. And she was heartbroken.
Because they got this very scammy vibe from them.
Right.
Not necessarily just because it's too much money, although it certainly is. But yeah, she got a very scammy vibe from the Chacones, which I think is very accurate.
I think that she's right.
I think you're on to something there,
good,
Judith.
Good instinct, Judith. The Chacones also go to Robin and Dwayne Ferris. They are also little people.
They got the same weird pitch, right? We need 25,000 plus. Give me your scooters.
No, they did not ask for their scooters. No, so what their pitch was, yeah, was actually that they were told they were asked to cover previous medical costs.
Right, not the legal costs anymore, now medical costs. And they showed some stock, I don't know if it was stock footage or actual footage from her operation. She had some foot operation because, of course, mm-hmm, that's one of the manifestations
with her
of that
joints,
of that syntax, of mm-hmm, that syndrome, is that it turns your hips the wrong way, it turns your feet in the wrong way, whatever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're like, okay, well, we're gonna need some reimbursement here for her medical expenses. I'm like, dude, why do you think it works like that, first of all?
Right. And they were like, no, we won't pay for previous medical costs. So they dropped, yeah, that eventually. But she said that they came across as a used car salesman, yeah, and they were asking themselves, like, why do they want to get rid of her? And so then they said, can we do a psych eval?
Yeah, let's just have somebody talk to her. And they're like, oh God, no.
Definitely not. But then they still proceeded with this, and they went to New Hampshire.
Was a huge mistake, by
which
the way.
They said, they showed this like spooky new, they go, it was kind of spooky.
Yeah.
And it was like this very steep gravel driveway. And they were like, God, you know, she could hurt herself there. She's, yeah, you know, this doesn't seem like the ideal place for Natalia to be. But they do say, and both Judith and the Ferrises say she looked her age.
Yeah,
she looked like she was six,
yeah,
which was her stated age. And then we get into some Christian talk with the Ferrises where, yeah,
it is
Robin,
not what the white baby Jesus wants us to do.
Well, Robin says we have God-given gifts, and, yeah, and Dwayne's is discernment. And right, so he determined, like his instinct said, we're not going to do this. And when they actually told Diane Chacon they didn't want to do it, she went bananas.
She flipped out on him.
That's right.
But yeah, so apparently she didn't even have shoes.
What, right,
they
she
didn't
have
shoes.
They gave her like a, they had, well, she was wearing braces.
Yeah.
And that's probably because she had had these surgeries and stuff.
Yeah.
One thing I want to talk about these particular witnesses is how weird and scammy this whole thing is.
From the get-go.
Even if these people are nice, decent people.
It's all scammy.
It's fucking weird,
yeah,
that you're, like, if I went to a produce convention and someone came up to me and said, hey, you're in produce, this is a child that comes from a produce background,
yeah,
they're
really,
from a farm,
yeah, they need really familiar with citrus,
needs to be adopted,
right.
Would you, like, how are you doing adoptions? That's like such super under the table,
yeah,
adoptions,
like, you do adoptions, yeah, the normal way,
yeah, right? There's
but
other
they're not obviously putting her back in the system. They're trying to do this thing like outside the system, and they think, okay, well, other little people might want to adopt her,
mm-hmm,
and maybe we can get 25,000.
And then there was this one, and it was kind of a throwaway line, but this is where I point my finger at the documentarians, and I'm,
yeah,
like, what the
terrible
fuck are you doing? You're not really doing any analysis here,
no,
because they allow things to be said that they don't pull the threads on.
Yeah.
I mean, fuck, we pull threads more than these people do. They said something about she was with a family. The Chacones found someone to give her to,
yeah,
for 4 months. And then the Chacones went to them and said, you know, we need some money. And they started to do some extortion thing.
Right.
And the people said, nope, we're not giving it to
we're
you.
Out.
You can have her back.
Yeah, because she's not that great. I'll be honest. She tried to murder us all.
There was like an incident with Pledge.
We're done.
No, they didn't say any of that, but
no,
they did say that she was out for 4 months, and then the Chacones were like trying to extort.
Trying to get some cash.
The Chacones sound like dodgy people. They don't speak at all. Why would they want to? I'm sure that they wouldn't.
If this was closer to present day, they would have just started a GoFundMe, begged for money online.
Yeah, they would have put this on TikTok.
Oh, absolutely.
She would have been there as a TikTok kind of creator, and they would have made money that way, and
yep,
made a lot of that, probably made good living,
yeah,
on that. And that's why I think the Barnetts were actually looking to exploit her that way,
yeah,
on social media.
Right. The way they kind of honestly did with their son.
With their son.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, Christine then at some point, obviously the adoption has happened with the Barnetts, and Christine reaches out to both Robin and Judith.
Yeah.
Judith has nothing to do with her. She doesn't even answer her
Facebook messages.
Never answered her. But Robin said that they did engage for about 2 years, but she then said something was really dodgy going on there. And Robin said that she and Dwayne felt that they were being used to justify Christine's desire to get rid of Natalia. And then here's another thing that does not get explained or no thread is pulled here. Robin says they lied to get her into their family and they lied to get rid of her. How did they lie to get her into their family?
Yeah, let's have that.
So
who knows?
I don't know. Like, when did they lie? I'd love to know about that.
Did he, like, misrepresent the color of his Lamborghini?
I have no idea. Then we get to see, we kind of hear a recording of the police. I don't know if he's the chief or who he is, but someone involved with the police who would have been associated with this Detective Klaus. Detective Klaus sadly died, I guess, like in 2015. Yeah. So there was no actual interview or way to confirm with Klaus what the truth was.
So obviously the Barnetts murdered him.
So maybe it was Hillary Clinton. Yeah, we don't possibly know. But anyway, Klaus writes an email to DCS and we see the email. The email says she is a child. She has baby teeth in this image. Yeah. And then here's another image of her where she appears to have adult teeth. So when she came to the country first, she had baby teeth, missing teeth. And they show the picture of her with missing teeth.
Oh, no, I've seen it.
And then they show another image where she has her grown-up teeth.
How old was she supposedly then?
Well, she would have been 8, probably. Yeah. You know, 6. If she was 5 with her missing front teeth.
Yep.
And then, you know, 6, 7, 8, she would have had adult teeth by then. Yeah. that seems about right. So this Klaus is the one that Michael says is the guy who said that she was definitely not a child and they should change her.
Right. Well, he's saying the exact opposite.
But he's saying the exact opposite in an email to DCS. Right. But according to Michael, to them, they said
they're running around peddling these stories and they're just trying to loop in as many people as possible that just kind of accept the story so it can become the narrative.
So that it becomes, and Karis actually says that. She says, look, for most of the things that we hear about, they all happened in the house. There's no way of knowing that because it's just Michael and Christine's word against everybody else's. But they have, she said, it feels like this creamery situation was created to provide some kind of outside
cover thing.
Like an example of
look at this big dramatic thing that happened at the creamery where she was allegedly screaming and trying to drag me into a deactivated electric fence.
Right. And so Karis points out that when DCS came, one of the questions they asked was, has there ever been an issue with domestic violence? Well, Christine and Michael both said no. But the reality is, in fact, there had been domestic violence issues. Michael, I guess, had her in a headlock and pushed her. Yeah. And then the nosy neighbor, though, Rachel Amber, says,
Edna Kravitz or whatever.
Edna Kravitz said that she reported seeing them fighting in the front yard and that Christine would berate Michael and that she felt sorry for Michael. Well, I mean, don't feel so sorry for Michael. They're both creepy
awful.
Weirdo.
But think about it. So let's say that they did stage that at the creamery, right? To try to bolster their narrative that she's dangerous. How fucked up your child's birthday and a trip you've allegedly promised to him to really try to set up his stepsister
his adopted sister to
be arrested or institutionalized. Like, how fucked up do you have to be?
Oh, these are fucked up people.
In your head that you would do that, not only just try to set up this, your adopted child, but also to use your other child's birthday
as the ruse.
As the cover. Yeah. That's fucked up.
It really is. Moreover, the Traders Point Creamery thing, the actual witnesses to it.
Yeah.
There's a guy who was working there. His name was Chris. He was a caretaker. He said the issue was not Natalia. When he came to the scene, Natalia was just kind of sitting there quietly. He said the issue was the caretaker, Christine. He said she was the one that was going bananas. Natalia was just kind of sitting there and not doing much.
Certainly not throwing her into a fence.
No. And so they show him the video of Michael saying, you know, the swears and what supposedly, I'm going to fucking kill you. You're a fucking bitch. Chris said, I have a pretty good memory.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything that like that happening.
Yeah.
And then Marco, who was also a worker on the at the Trader's Creamery. Point Creamery, said that the fence, they asked him, did you shut down the electricity? And he said, I didn't have to because it was never on.
It wasn't on anyway.
It wasn't. Yeah. The cows weren't even in that area.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even on. So there's really no danger at all.
Correct.
Which Judith, they go back and they're talking to Judith and she's very sensible about it. And she says,
look at me. I can't battle a full grown adult. There's no way she could.
No, you could just hold. And she said, you could just hold me off.
Yeah.
And she's not wrong. And I mean, it's kind of a funny image if you think about it, because you put your hand on their head.
Yeah. And they're swinging.
And they're swinging in the, and they're not going to do anything. And honestly, like, what are you like, if they really even got a good punch in on you, how much could that hurt?
Not much.
And then you give them a good hard kick.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be insensitive, but the reality is,
even if they could hurt you in a fist fight, they're not dragging you against your will.
No. Into
a fence.
No, they're definitely not. I mean, and then you see a video of Natalia describing that event. And I actually believed what she said.
Yeah.
Because what she said is, I did sit down. I was,
yeah,
I,
my feet
I was
fucking hurt.
My feet hurt. I threw up because I hadn't eaten.
Is she being,
are they starving her? Yeah. Like, are they not feeding her?
Is she,
how much is this poor child being abused? So they sat me down, or so I sat down, and then she said, Christine offered to help me up and insisted I was going to have to do this walk. And she tried to help me up and then she fell and I fell. And she goes, it was kind of close. So it sounds like they just had some kind of
tangle.
Weird thing. Yeah. Right. And maybe Christine, it seems like it was faked. Cause how is Christine going to fall? Like, how is that little tiny Natalia? And she's little, very little.
Yeah.
How is she going to pull an adult over? It's just, it's nonsensical.
Certainly, she would be unable to pull me over because I am like a mountain goat.
Up until now, you've really only been seeing Michael in this 2019 interview.
Right.
So now you get to see Michael in a 2022 interview. And he tells a completely different story about what happens.
It's almost like he's a fucking liar. Almost.
So I don't believe this story particularly either. But at this point, he says, I didn't even see, I didn't see the police. The police were gone by the time, by the time I was able to get back with the boys, they were gone.
Yep.
And at this point, what you have to understand in the 2022 interview, Michael is going to be, he knows he's going to be on trial for this. And so now he's really changing his tune.
Yeah, like maybe
I didn't really know anything was happening. But what I do know is Christine was the one that was with her.
Yeah.
And what he does now.
Throwing her ass right under the bus.
So from everything from now on is mainly that 2022 interview where he is definitely kind of backpedaling.
Right.
And saying, Christine is
at fault for various reasons.
I'm
believing what she's telling me.
If
that didn't happen, that's because she told me it happened. I believed her.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And you start, and then in the upcoming episodes now, I know you haven't seen them yet, but you start hearing some stuff that is going to be like,
shit.
Wow.
It's going to get wilder than it already is.
It is going to get,
this thing is spiraling.
It does. And it just never gets resolved. There's no resolution.
That's because, why? Because these guys are shitty documentarians.
They really are.
Who is it? Who are we calling out, by the way?
The series is produced by Eric Evangelista and Shannon Evangelista.
Shame. Shame.
Shame. Shame. Shame. Shame.
You guys are terrible. Find different jobs.
All right. Well, let's talk about this. Conclusions about episode 2 and what our thoughts are on this documentary.
That I was a little bit more credulous than you were in the first episode.
Yes.
Because you were right away. Your radar was going.
Because I can't stand
him. Full FBI. Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I can't stand. He is so clearly disordered in some way.
Yeah.
Narcissism or something.
Something. I just thought he was just a dumb guy, but which is not enough to make him guilty. But now that we're getting into episode 2, I was less likely to take his story at face value, right? there's just, you know, again, we have these missing voices from the story, which I assume.
Some got plugged in, though.
Yeah.
You heard from Natalia.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, some did. But, like, limited, right? Yeah. Just, like, limited. Like, did they ask her about the Formula 409 thing? No. Right? Did they ask her about being Chucky in the bedroom?
No.
No. So, again, they had one incident that they asked her about. And, yes, we got some information on it. And I'm with you. I do agree with your analysis or your take on it more than I agree with Michael's, because you're not as crazy as he is and you're not as shitty a person. But I also think it's possible that, you know, her feet hurt. She sits down. Mom says, nope, you got to get up. And do I think that there could have been some tussling, right? Like you get up and they like do that thing where their hips won't lock, you know, they're like, you know, like they turn into, you know,
noodles.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're no longer vertebrates.
Yeah. They make themselves dead weight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do I believe that could have happened? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do I believe that she was all of a sudden hulked out and lifted her mom up over her head and started carrying her to the fence? No, I do not.
I don't even think she had, I don't think that she grabbed her. I could see a struggle ensuing where, you know, she might have stood like, up and like was pulling back or something like, you know how kids can be and they can do the dead weight thing. They can do the thing where they tug at you.
But I 100% believe Chris.
Yeah.
Who when said, he said, hey, that didn't happen. I would have remembered that.
Yeah.
If someone was threatening, I have a pretty good memory, especially for murder, right? So if someone had been threatening murder, I would have known, right?
Honestly, even if she was a child and she was threatening to kill someone, police came and saw that, they would say, they would have had to have taken that seriously.
Right.
They may have said, there's something wrong with her, we need to send her to the
psych
eval, but they would have been on top of that and saying, really honestly, I can just imagine, to me, it would seem plausible that Christine would have been freaking out and full Karen and saying, she's threatening to kill me.
Right. And look, kids say horrible things sometimes when they're mad.
Oh yeah.
If Matthew had at any point gone, I hate you, I'm going to kill you, I'd be like, take your best shot, bro. You're tiny.
Well, okay. This brings up actually a good point, because as time goes on now in the documentary, you're going to hear Natalia saying some stuff that's really fucked up.
Yeah. Like, look, she's had a fucked up life.
She's had a fucked up life. But my son had an imaginary friend.
Right.
Who was named Jonah the Killer.
Right.
And he supposedly lived under my front porch at the time.
So maybe, Mom, treat me with a little bit more respect. Or Jonah the Killer is going to make your next trip to the grocery store a little unpleasant.
That's right. And I was like, when I heard some of the things that Natalia does end up saying, like it would have scared me if Jonah had said to me, Jonah the Killer has a knife and he wants to kill you.
Right, right. Dad. If he had a lot of good specifics.
Yeah. I would have been like,
by the way,
fuck, what is Jonah the Killer want to kill us?
That would be an excellent rap name for him.
I know, Jonah the Killer.
DJ Jonah the Killer.
No, his name was good.
But it has to be Killer.
I thought about that, and I thought about Judith the teacher says, I've had kids threaten to drink my blood. Yeah, I've had kids threaten to kill me. She's like, never.
And they're trying to see what'll get the reaction.
It's an attention getting thing, right? More than a real life thing. Now, if they found Natalia torturing animals,
correct,
or setting fires,
right, that's a more reliable indicator of psychopathic
behavior. Then I'd be like, but making threats. And she's an orphan. She's had a rough life, and she obviously knows she's not fitting into this family.
Right.
I just think she's looking for, it sounds like there's some attention seeking behavior rather than, and I could be completely wrong, but it's just in the same way that Jonah had Jonah the Killer.
Yeah.
I didn't immediately go, oh my God, let's get him into therapy.
Right.
That came later.
Thanks for the warning, Jonah.
Yeah, but you're right.
We're now going to be entering and exiting through the back door.
But I didn't say to him, oh, Jonah the Killer is just made up. But I also didn't say I'm terrified of Jonah the Killer or make him think that Jonah the Killer was that
kind of
big
power.
Deal.
Yeah, you're like, okay.
I was like, well, why does Jonah the Killer feel? And I always called him Jonah the Killer.
Of course.
Because there was
Give
a part
him his
of
full
me
name.
that really thought that was funny.
Yeah. And I, tell me about Jonah the Killer. Jonah the not killer.
We still talk about it. I'll be like, Jonah the Killer. He's like, I don't know what
Whatever,
the hell.
Man.
Like, I don't know
well,
why.
Well, of course,
I
did you always that. Think that imaginary friends are filling some gap, right, that kids have. You know, like that, you know, I want a friend to do, you know, so I want a friend who's going to have my back, right? A Jonah the Killer.
Yeah.
So I know there's somebody fucks with me. Jonah the Killer's got me covered.
So now what we are going to start getting into, we get a little preview and you have Natalia calling, it sounds like 911.
Right.
And claiming that she's stalking a neighbor and she doesn't know what she's going to do. She might hurt the neighbor or whatever. Yeah. And this... So this leads us up to what's coming up in upcoming episodes. And so I'm excited to get to these are fun conversations to have because this documentary is not super well done.
No.
But it's a very interesting story. And
it's like this is all the raw material you would need to do an actual documentary.
I agree.
Without the actual documentary editing, producing, whatever, we've been given all the raw material.
Yeah.
So now we're producing our own documentary right here on our podcast with commentary and, you know, I mean, obviously we're not asking questions of the players here.
No.
But this is something they could have used, right?
I agree. Well, here's what I think. I suspect that people were not super willing to talk to these
people. Well, obviously,
people.
Yeah.
And so they only have what they have. And I think that they allowed Michael to tell his story the way he wanted to tell it.
Yeah.
And they are just kind of putting it out there. And I don't know if they think that maybe he'll still give them access
right
after this, but he might because I think he's a really just a narcissistic weird. I know we're not supposed to overuse the word narcissist,
but sometimes they exist.
And I think this is a pretty good example of one.
So unlike you, I'm watching them as we go. Mm-hmm. So I've only watched 2 episodes.
Wait till you get into...
Oh, I'm sure it's going to get wild.
Oh, it gets really wild. You meet
wild.
Oh, yes. you meet a really ribald cast of characters coming up.
I can't wait. Oh. But for right now, here's where I am. Michael is definitely full of shit on some level, possibly all levels. Mm-hmm. Very sketchy that mom is not in the picture. Mm-hmm. I definitely believe the creamery incident did not go down the way Michael described it. Mm-hmm. I also think it is possible, given how she's been treated for all of her young life, that Natalia could have some serious issues and may actually act out in a violent way, mm-hmm. right? I think that's totally possible. And like you said, there's that little sneak preview of the 911. If you've been told by your last 3 or 4 families that you are, you know, a disaster, a psychopath, evil, whatever it is, you might start to live into that a little bit and just say, oh, okay, I guess that's who I am.
Yeah.
You know, and I get attention at least. At least they pay attention to me when I'm doing that. So I would not be, I'm not going to say that she was just, you know, sitting there like a delicate little angel the whole time, but I would put the responsibility for her acting out squarely on these succession of families that have failed her.
100%. All right. Well, let's wrap up here and tell everybody about our social media. Please come and follow us on Twitter. We are at Extemporaneous2. I am at Christina Jax and Mark is at Mark Eats Peach. We also have a Facebook.
Is he laughing at me?
Mark is miming, eating a peach. He took a bite.
Yes.
And then, we also have a Facebook, so come and follow us on our Facebook group, which is where Mark does some interaction on Facebook. I don't know if you're still doing it, but...
Yeah, once in a while.
You should.
If you say something to me, I'll promise to say something back.
How's that? All right. Well, that's it for me. Do you have anything else to add besides bye?
No, that's it.
All right. I'm going to say bye.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.